You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
It's the first time that Apple have actually decided to tell people about something that they're developing.
High-speed broadband. Let's just make sure that we can get it in Australia this year, not next.
The three main spamming countries are the United States, China, and South Korea.
And I've got some residual powers.
Sounds like something out of Harry Potter.
Senator Coonan, the voice of reason.
There's a couple of systems on a gantry that's actually based on a military missile tracking system.
You put the date on ePrey, and you get a whole service just on it.
How does it go?
IE7, you were having trouble installing it because you had a genuine copy of Windows that wouldn't validate properly. What did you have to do to get past that?
Built a new machine.
But how hard can it be?
Well, it's not hard at all.
At the end of the day, the photography is all about the person's eye and what they see.
If you find something that's inappropriate about your child, you need to do something about it because it will not go away.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. It wasn't so long ago that we were all aghast and our jaws hit the floor about the $11 million that Telstra CEO Sol Trujillo pocketed as part of his annual salary and bonus package. It was equated to the Prime Minister's salary of around $380,000. Well now, showing absolute contempt for the company's shareholders, Trujillo's salary will edge close to, or if not exceed, $20 million. Telstra shareholders delivered what amounted to a resounding vote of no confidence in their board of directors at the company's annual general meeting in Sydney last week. Two-thirds of the shareholders voted against the company's remuneration report. That's the one which includes hefty pay and perk rises for the chief executive Sol Trujillo. Among those who took offence at the size and structure of Mr. Trujillo's salary package was the Future Fund, the country's biggest investor, which owns 16.5% of Telstra. But the vote was non-binding, and so Telstra plans to do nothing at all to change the way it rewards its executives. Not bad for a company who blatantly goes around saying that what it's doing, or in most cases not doing, is in the interest of the shareholders. And given the Future Fund owns 16.5% of the company, you would think its opinion might count for something. Obviously not. In July 2005, when Sol Trujillo came to Australia from the United States and brought a few of his friends to run the company's largest technology company, Telstra's shares were at $5.06. They're now around $4.80. Now, that's pretty simple arithmetic, and for the shareholders, they're simply saying he gets paid $11.8 million last year, and now we're looking at a salary that would be in excess of $20 million. They just can't see any justification for it.
This week on Tech Talk Radio,
Lydia Davis talks search with Tim Mayer from Yahoo in the United States, Google lets an Android on the loose, the telecommunications ombudsman receives record complaints, the battle for the broadband vote heats up, and Australia sees a surge in domain names. All that and more in Australia's premier tech talk show, Tech Talk Radio. But first, let's find out what's been making news in the IT world this week.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News.
Coonan wins brownie points for OECD broadband figures.
Tech stocks plunge under beleaguered US economy.
Target takes a violent video game off the shelves.
A grand jury indicts 17 on charges of identity theft.
And Facebook's CEO says the free ride is now over.
I'm Graham Callaghan.
And I'm Dr. Ron. Welcome to Tech Talk News.
Communications Minister Helen Coonan scored political points last week after the release of new OECD figures, which ranked Australia's broadband speeds at 9th in the world. The figures were released last week after opposition leader Kevin Rudd and Shadow Communications Minister Stephen Conroy made claims in October that Australia was the 36th worst broadband country and that speeds were among the slowest in the world. The statistics rank Australia 9th in terms of speeds offered by incumbent telecommunications operators and in terms of average download speeds. Smart House News noted that there is still a massive difference between the speeds offered by Australia and leading broadband nations such as Japan. Helen Coonan claimed last week that Australia's rise to 9th spot from 16th was very embarrassing for Labor leader Kevin Rudd, but opposition telecommunications spokesman Stephen Conroy said that the minister directed the ACCC to stop collecting broadband statistics earlier this year, and that the OECD was left to base its findings on estimates provided by the department, resulting in Australia leapfrogging up the broadband rankings.
Technology stocks plunged in the United States last week as investors sought relief from lending and housing pressures weighing on the economy. Cisco Systems took a 9.5% beating after its CEO, John Chambers, warned that weakening demand among major customers, including banks saddled with huge home loan losses, would probably slow the company's growth. Heavyweights Google and Apple were also affected, with Apple shares down nearly 10% at one point and Google losing up to 7.5%. Other prominent losers included Oracle, Amazon.com, eBay and Hewlett-Packard. While deepening concerns in the banking and real estate sectors had recently driven investors to turn to technology companies, the poor performance in home loans and investments appeared to be having a flow-on effect to tech stocks.
Target Corporation said the video game Manhunt 2 had been removed from its stores last week due to particularly gruesome content that could be unlocked by hackers. Manhunt 2 by Rockstar Games is a first-person action game for PlayStation portables, in which two prisoners embark on a bloody rampage after escaping from a mental asylum. While the game is rated mature by the Entertainment Software Rating Board, it took hackers only 24 hours to unlock the PSP version of the game, disclosing additional violent and gruesome imagery. The imagery was intentionally hidden by Rockstar Games after the first version of Manhunt 2 received an adults-only rating. Ratings Board President Patricia Vance said the board is standing behind Manhunt 2's mature rating, noting the difficulty of unlocking the offending content.
A grand jury in the United States last week indicted 17 people on charges of identity theft, trafficking stolen credit card numbers, and internet crime. The 173 charges were filed after a two-year investigation. Prosecutors will allege the defendants trafficked more than 95,000 stolen credit card numbers and undertook more than $4 million in credit card fraud. The investigation by federal authorities in the United States involved the movement of more than $35 million through electronic payment service Western Express International.
And in controversial news for fans of the popular social networking site Facebook, CEO Mark Zuckerberg said last week that the free ride is now over, as brand names like Coca-Cola and Microsoft were being invited to establish their own profiles to interact with real users. In an effort to turn the 50 million strong user base into an army of viral marketers, the major corporates are being recruited to create their own Facebook profiles, which, just like those of regular users, can include video, photos, announcements, promotions, and even plug-in applications. Effectively, by writing a comment on an advertiser's Facebook wall or publishing a review of its products, the user becomes a so-called trusted referrer. It's not yet clear whether such referrers will receive any form of gratuity from the corporate or from Facebook, or if negative reviews or opinions will be permitted. The announcement comes as the company is under intense pressure to cash in on the wealth of personal data it's collected following a $250 million investment from Microsoft, which valued Facebook at $15 billion.
And that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
Why do we need translators? This drives me crazy, Graham.
I'll tell you the reason we need translators. Because Microsoft insists on reinventing the wheel.
Video search has become important, you know, with the advent of the digital camera and the fact that just about everybody has one now. You know, there's an enormous amount of image data being created.
Why would you buy an LCD replacement and the thing's not even switched on? You can't even see what it looks like.
They're keeping their contrast down.
It probably looks better that way.
Check your media care cards at the door, boys, on the way out. That's therapy for the evening.
ODT does not equal DocX. That's the moral of today's program.
Not by a long shot.
Well, Open Social is a product that Google have created. It basically lets developers create applications for social networks, anything really that accepts the Open Social code.
They have to befriend either one party, don't they? So who is that going to be? Well, we'll find out later on this month now.
A Google phone.
Yeah. Your output of your work is delivered via broadband to your customers.
But that's a special data plan you're on.
Yeah, well, why can't... It's the same... Now you're going to make me check my Medicare card at the door.
Entertaining, informative... and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Yes, this is Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. Welcome aboard for yet another evening on the countdown to Christmas. Not long to go now, boys. How are you doing?
going well. This is turning into a television studio.
It is a bit like that, due to the popularity of the webcast. Is that what you call it these days?
I don't know. It's out of control. That's what it is. I didn't even shave. I should have worn my tuxedo if I know it's going to be on
exactly. We
television.
Had, our television ratings are about to be released. We had 630, I think, people tune in to us in the last 15 minutes of the podcast last week. So we've gone to the great effort of setting up the camera. Haven't quite got around to getting it completely working yet. So watch the web spot and you'll see it there. Also, who are the boys reading the news on the front tonight? That was very good.
Oh, did you like that?
I did. There's even been an email already from Michael Fields listening to on the stream. It says, hey, joint news broadcast presenters. Cool. So there you go. Your fans are out there already.
We had a little bit of spare time during the week, didn't we, Graham?
Tell when you're on holidays, Dr. Ron.
Can you?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
The production quality of the show is, it changes. Whether it goes up or down is yet to be determined, but it changes.
Dear. If nothing else, it's controversial. Hey, interesting week this week. We're going to talk about Telstra very shortly. How can we not after what's gone on in the last, since we were on the radio last time? So stay tuned for that. We've also got a little bit of a search engine optimization, I guess, Yahoo's perspective on things. We had, Lyd had a great chat. She's doing the rounds in the US at the moment, as you know. And she's going to have a chat to Yahoo tonight, which would be good. And then the following week, we're going to chat to Google.
It'll be good as a follow-up from last week's Microsoft
Tim Mayer,
installment. Yeah.
Who runs everything Yahoo-wise down the end of her street, because everyone's down the end of her street over there in Silicon Valley. She had a chat with him. So that's interesting. That's coming up this evening. Other than that, correspondence. Anyone got any letters?
Don't have anything this week outstanding.
Nothing outstanding?
No, but log on to the forum, though, forum.techtalkradio.com.au, and let us know what you think.
Yep. Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au throughout the course of the show tonight, or even after that if you like. Or you can also SMS us whilst we're live on air on 0430 582 077. I just want to have a couple of brief chats about a few things across the course of the week that's annoyed me. Firstly, at work, we did the, when I say we did, it's still currently underway, changing from ADSL 1 to ADSL 2 with the same ISP. Now, do you think this would be a simple task?
I know from bitter experience that it can sometimes not be a simple task.
Graham chuckles knowingly.
chuckle, yes. The ISP that I'm with, and I'm not going to name names at this point in time, because in their defence, it's a bit like litigation, and we're still underway. We're still in the courts here, boys. We've put in the big tick, and we said, yes, we'd like to go to, because they sent us an email saying ADSL 2 is now available. Would you like to go? It's faster, cheaper, better, and all that sort of stuff. I said, yeah, why not? You know, how bad can it be? Having come from an ADSL 2 world before with Internode, it was fantastic. But unfortunately, where we are now in Hawthorne, we couldn't get Internode. So we're with another organisation at the moment. And anyway, they said, look, it's a painless experience. You just turn your, you know, leave your equipment on. Don't change any of your settings, your same username, your same password. We'll work and come to work the next morning. Chances are it'll all just be a little bit faster. Said, oh, good. That's just exactly what you want as a consumer. You don't want to be fiddling and carrying on with your equipment and your settings.
Yep.
That was Thursday last week. It's Monday night, as we know. We go live to air on a Monday night and still have no internet at the office.
No internet
since
at
Thursday.
All. Nothing at all.
Nothing at all. We we do have something. We have a signal, like the ADSL light on the modem is showing that we have sync.
Yep.
The line speed is showing, 12 megabits per second in the downstream and around about 1 megabit per second in the upstream, which is
okay.
Good.
Yep.
And hitting the please connect when you put the username and password in with all the appropriate settings that you normally do on that, it comes back and says, I'm sorry, the remote computer has terminated your connection.
Yes.
No.
No, I'm saying yes, I understand.
Are you familiar with this error message, Graham?
It's
something you see out in the field?
That combination of symptoms suggests that what they've got is the wrong codes on the line, so that
Enigmatic, mysterious,
you're not connected to the
codes on the line.
Yeah, you're not connected to the. You're either not connected to the DSLAM that you think you are, or that your ISP thinks you are, or that DSLAM isn't connected back to the right sort of back end network.
Yeah, there's this thing called authentication. It's a bit like a handshake where you say, hi, I'm Dr. Ron and here's my account and please connect me. And
that's right.
You know, that process is, we're not getting to that machine to actually do that process.
Yeah, you're probably not talking through no fault of your own. You're probably not able to talk to the right authentication.
Oh, I know, it's no fault of my own, but do you think you can tell someone in support that? Oh, now there's another contentious issue, isn't it?
What have they suggested that you do? Is it something...
Oh, reformat your hard drive, restripe this, put the pin in the back of your modem, just absolutely crucify your settings of going, hang on a minute, buddy. I've got my laptop here. I've got two setups, two unique setups, right? Two different modems, two everything. So I said, no, I'll just unplug the phone line out of the back of one modem, stick it into the back of the other one and try and connect exactly the same. Different brand modems and all that, because they say, oh, that modem's not compatible with us and you should have this and you should have that. I said, listen, I've got two separate situations here, two separate control environments. They both don't work. They're both returning the same message.
Yeah.
Oh, I'll log it as a fault then, shall I? Oh, hooray.
Would you mind? That'd be great.
Look, you know, and that's what it's all about, isn't it? Technology in the office and at home.
One of the most difficult things is as a technically knowledgeable user to get through that first level of the help system at your ISP is the most painful process.
Can you unplug all your fax machines?
Level one.
Yeah, all of that, yeah.
Yeah, turn the lights off. Can you turn the fridge off while you're at it too, please?
Have you got dial tone?
And frequently, the way to do it is to say, can I speak to your supervisor, please? And to explain to the supervisor, I know what I'm doing. I've done all the level one stuff. Let's actually get on and solve this problem.
Mm. Anyway, they got back to me and said, well, when I say they got back to me, they promised me 24 hours. So that's 9 o'clock tomorrow morning. I'll let you know next week on the show how we go.
For those people listening that aren't in Melbourne, whereabouts is Hawthorne? Is it hundreds of kilometres out of town?
No, Hawthorne is approximately 6 or 7 kilometres due east of the city centre. We're not far.
It's not a huge distance, is it?
And it's even closer to the population centre of Melbourne. It is right at the population centre of Melbourne.
Mm. Anyway, so there you go. That's my dilemma this week. Hope you've all had a better week than what I've had so far.
Week's been cruisy.
You're on holidays, better anyway.
You're doing news services, which just shock everyone. Go, oh, look, there's two voices in the news tonight. Hey, another thing I was going to say too, dropping the www, I'm interested in your thoughts on this. Is this a relatively good thing to do, or do you reckon we should keep the www prefix for all of the websites? Because, you know, these days you can say, just go to techtalkradio.com.au and it gets there. Some people say, oh, you've got to put the W's in front of it. I'm interested in opinions here because I had a discussion at work
okay.
about this.
Let me suggest something else to you. In Melbourne and in a lot of the other places around, a little while ago we had a thing where we added a 9 to the front of our phone numbers.
Oh, yes, I remember
to get
that.
An extra digit.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no point telling everybody the 9 because everybody knows it's there. So just give them the last 7 digits and they'll know to add the 9 and that'll do.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing.
I reckon.
You're just not being specific enough. There is a reason why we have that triple W there, and that's to differentiate one service from another. So at my office, I might have a web server called triple W, but I might have an FTP server that I can get files from, that I can download files from. I might have a mail server to deliver mail to and from that has a webmail service on it as well. So even when I'm connecting from a web browser, I might talk to the triple W machine if I want to look at the website. But I might, from the same web browser, talk to mail. And my company's...
All right. You've been looking at it purely from a technical point of view.
That's right.
I'm going to throw you an advertising point
I'm
of view.
I'm a technician. What do you want me to do?
No, that's exactly right. And I'm from an advertising side of view. Now, say, how long do you think it takes to say www? Second and a half?
Well, it's a stupid abbreviation because the abbreviation itself is 3 times longer than what it is that you're abbreviating.
Yeah, thanks, Tim Berners-Lee.
Isn't it?
What do you say? It takes longer to say.
It takes longer to say www.
My point is...
that it takes to say World Wide Web.
My point is, there's a second and a half an advertiser can get into a radio spot by saying, yeah, and that's why I do, you know, visit us at techtalkradio.com.au because I've configured it to work that way.
Yep.
Oh, my God, the webcam's up. Sorry, I just saw it come up on the screen there. So it should wave to everybody. There we go. Yes, so the point of the matter is, in advertising, we like dropping the www because it's a good second and a half, yep. 2 seconds of radio time that you can do.
But you can't be absolutely certain that you can always drop it because some networks may require it.
That's right.
And if you're going to drop it, you need to make sure that the network you're talking to is configured to allow that.
Too right. Dr. Ron, you've been awfully quiet on this. You must have an opinion on this.
I do have an opinion.
You sound like you might have more than one opinion on this.
Yeah, I do. I can see it from both sides. I mean, one part of me says, from a technical standpoint, says don't be lazy. The www is there for a reason. You should type it in because you're requesting something very specific from the computer at the other end when you type it. On the other hand, I can see that if all that people want to do is to go to a website and I could understand them thinking that the 3 W's at the front of the address would be superfluous, but it is there for a reason. I've got a web server, and Andrew said to me before about my blog, for example, you have to type in www. And then the address. if you just type in...
How many people have told you you've got the Apache test page up on your...
Well, quite a few people. And I say, but you're not typing in the address correctly. And they say, well, I am. I say, no, you're not. If you type the address incorrectly, you'll see the correct page. There might be other technical reasons why I've got a test page up on the root of the domain.
Yeah.
I may want to offer other services there at a later time or do something else with that. So... look, my initial response is don't be lazy. Type in the full address as it's given to you, but I can understand why people in this day and age want everything fast and they want it quick and they don't want to be typing stuff they don't have to type.
The internet is not just web pages. The internet is a massive network that can do a lot of different things. The internet is not just about web pages, and that's the reason.
Okay, good. I'm glad I asked all that. Let's talk about Telstra, shall we? Have you had any good experiences with Telstra lately? They've been in the news again for all the wrong reasons.
They've been keeping me entertained in the mainstream media.
Really? Why? What's happened?
Well, yeah, shareholders, they'd be pretty dark at the moment, I'd be guessing.
Absolutely.
They voted on whether or not Sol should get his proposed salary increase.
They did?
They returned a resounding no.
Now, what sort of... Just to remind me, his pay increase was, what, 3% per year over 4 years or something?
That's right, not unreasonable.
3%'s more than that, let me tell you.
No, it was it was 100% over 1 year, wasn't
100?
It?
Exactly. Just about. Like, they're proposing from his $11 million. And remember, we equated it back to John Howard's salary of $380,000 a year or thereabouts.
Which I don't think is an unreasonable amount for a prime minister to be paid.
No. Anyway, Sol's edging towards 20.
Depends on the prime 20. Minister. I'm going for the job.
Yeah, sorry, yes?
Well, you've got enough spare time. Why don't you? You've got Sol edging towards $20 million at the moment for his salary, which and as the shareholder said, we don't think that's quite right. But anyway, 66% of them said no, we don't think so, and then the board turned around and said, well, you don't know what you're talking about anyway. So you know, another great.
Thanks for your valuable input, but we'll do what we want to do anyway.
I'll give you a refresher in just a sec, but before we do that, I just want to talk to you about something that was in the news today. Telstra will pay up to $5 million to settle a class action brought against the telco by some of its shareholders. Heaven forbid the shareholders have got into Telstra. Apparently, they've been not disclosing what they should be disclosing on the stock market, keeping it a bit of a secret and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Investors are expected to share about $3.7 million in compensation from Telstra after legal and administrative costs, because Slater and Gordon want their cut, for acting for the shareholders. So, it was the first case in Australia in which a company has agreed to pay out for alleged continuous disclosure breaches, is what they're saying. Now, it's not the amount of money, it's not the poor old shareholders, it's the fact that someone's gone, yeah, pay the money and run, because there'll be other dirt underneath there if you appeal it, you know.
Yep.
We'll dig up more and more stuff. So, the conspiracy theories and all, I just think that there's strange things are afoot at the moment because they haven't been disclosing things. Sol's getting his kick, and all the boys on the board are probably going to get a bit of a kick. There's all sorts of strange things sort of in that genre of things. So, and of course, chuck something in from the TIO, the Telecommunications Industry Ombudsman, about the ever-increasing
number of complaints,
which I do have here on my table, which we'll talk about very shortly. It's leaving us a bitter taste in the mouths of a lot of Australian shareholders, even Australians in general who may not be a shareholder. And I'm one, I might say. I'll put my thing on the table.
Did you get a letter from Telstra about the meeting?
Yes, Sol sent me a letter today. No, it wasn't about that. He was just, you know, justifying his existence,
I think. Important for him to get the 100% salary increase
absolutely.
Over a year.
Mm. Absolutely. Anyway, just in case you're not quite up to it, I'm going to play a piece here which recaps a little bit about what's happened during the course of this week and also about a bit of the bad PR that's floating around in respect to broadband at the moment.
Majority of Telstra shareholders have voted against its controversial remuneration plan. Now, early figures show 65% of votes are against the resolution. The future
Australia's biggest telecommunications company held its annual general meeting in Sydney last week and snubbed 66% of its shareholders when they voted against the company's remuneration report, which recommends a significant increase in salaries for Chief Executive Sol Trujillo and his senior management team.
Hello, I'm Sol Trujillo. This weekend, Telstra has turned on our Next G network.
In what can only be called troubling times for Australia's largest telco, what with service complaints to the Telecommunications Ombudsman at an all-time high, fibre to the node going nowhere fast, and growing shareholder dissatisfaction, why would the Telstra board ignore the wishes of 66% of its 1.6 million strong shareholder base? From an outsider looking in, it appears to be a resounding vote of no confidence in their board of directors. Among those who took offence at the size of the structure of Mr. Trillo's salary package was the Future Fund, the country's biggest investor, which owns 16.5% of Telstra. But the vote was non-binding, and so Telstra plans to do nothing at all to change the way it rewards its executives. The Future Fund is a vehicle the federal government now uses to invest the superannuation money of its public servants. With $60 billion under management, it's not only the biggest investor in Australia, it's also ranked as one of the top 20 pension funds in the world. It has an independent board of guardians made up of some of the most sophisticated business figures in the country, and its chairman is the former chief executive of the Commonwealth Bank, David Murray. He put out a statement confirming what the market had long suspected, that he and his colleagues had voted against Telstra's remuneration report. He said, "We are obliged to consider the report as a whole and believe that a critical principle in remuneration is that there is a clear alignment between long-term equity-based executive reward and returns to shareholders. We believe this principle is not sufficiently evident in the Telstra arrangements. Given the Future Fund owns 16.5% of the company, you would think its opinion might count for something. Think again." Here's what Charles Masick, the head of Telstra's Remuneration Committee, had to say about the fund's ability to make an informed judgment on the issue.
We have to recognise that the people who are advising institutions, the proxy groups, have no expertise whatsoever. They would not have a single person on their payroll that has any commercial experience in terms of remuneration.
After the meeting, it was clear most of the shareholders found the whole remuneration report far too difficult to comprehend.
I would have always voted against it because I think there's too much money being paid to the wrong people. Huge salaries paid to them with many, many perks, more than anybody really needs. And the money could be better spread throughout the whole company and give the all of the people a share of it because they're the ones actually doing the work.
They are overpaid, but there's nothing much we can do about it.
I think they're quite adequate as they are. Seems a tremendous reward for one person.
Well, my husband thinks he deserves a lot. He thinks he's marvellous. And I don't know enough about it to make a judgment. And rather than make the wrong judgment, I didn't make any.
Dad, why did they build the Great Wall of China?
Now, if you're a broadband user who experienced dropouts, slow data speeds and unhelpful help desks, you're not alone.
That was during a time of Emperor Nazi Goring, and it was to keep the rabbits here.
Customer complaints about Telstra and other telecommunications companies have risen sharply. The number of complaints to Australia's telecommunications industry ombudsman jumped about 17% in the business year which has just ended in June. Deirdre O'Donnell is Australia's telecommunications industry ombudsman, and she says many of the complaints her office receives are about internet service.
Not being able to contact your service provider, lengthy wait times, all simple issues that I hope the industry is going to do a better job addressing.
Telstra tells customers who use its high-speed broadband service, Big Pond, that they can do all sorts of things like play video games or watch television. But while Telstra is upbeat about Big Pond, a lot of customers have a problem with it. In the last business year to the end of June, Australia's telecommunications industry ombudsman had more than 7,000 complaints about the service. Telstra's fixed line and mobile phone services were also the subject of thousands of calls. Total complaints about Telstra topped 24,000. The telecommunications industry ombudsman, Deirdre O'Donnell, has attempted to put that number into perspective.
Of course it's of concern to us when we see significant increases. There's no doubt about that, because the customer experience is not a good one, and that's why people come to the Ombudsman.
As well as Telstra, other companies frequently complained about were Dodo Australia, with more than 10,000 complaints, and Hutchison's 3G Australia, with about 7,000.
So I say our role is to hold a mirror up to the industry and to show it what its customers are saying to us. If you want to look at it from a business perspective, it's good business intelligence. Take the TIO data, feed that back into your business systems and processes, and come up with better service for your customers. We also report to our members every quarter on their specific complaint issues, so they get good, strong feedback from us. They know how they've gone quarter to quarter, and they also know how they're going relative to the rest of the industry.
The Telecommunications Industry Ombudsman was established by the federal government in 1993 to investigate complaints about telephone or internet services. And it's not hard to find people with complaints about telecommunications companies.
I used Telstra for 17 years. Now I moved to the Vodafone. I think they rip off you all the time. Oh, they charge you $150, $100, whatever. But, yeah, the first month, second month, they're very good. And after that, they make sure they make a profit from you.
I think it's got worse by a long way. There's more competition, and because there's more competition, the service has dropped off. The support services are not as good as they used to be.
People with complaints are encouraged to contact their companies first. Then if they get no joy, call the industry ombudsman. I am, you are, we are, Australia.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
So there you have the lowdown on where we're all at the moment in respect to the big T and all and sundry.
A lot of unhappy campers.
There was, wasn't there?
A lot of complaints there.
Well, it's funny you should mention that because the TIO, if you go to on the web, www.tio.com.au.
Well done.
You'll find they have online all the – they have a quarterly magazine that comes out. You can subscribe to it. I have. I think it's well worth a bit of a look-see, especially for what we do in here. But it's an 8- or 10-page document which can really goes through in detail about all the complaints against TIO members by issue. Now, some of the ISPs, I think they have to be a member of the TIO before they get this information or before they can be complained against and stuff like that. One of the things which I found interesting was Hutchison's 3 was fairly big in the complaints department too, compared to Telstra. The total issues for landline, well, they've got it down here as a breakdown. It's probably best if you go to the web and have a look. They break it down into landline, mobile services, internet services, and the MSI scheme service complaints, which I'm not 100% sure what that acronym stands for, but one day I'll work it out. So, mm-hmm. So there you go. Have a bit of a visit. But in landline, well, let's have a quick look at mobiles and things like that. Says he, trying to run his finger along there. 18.7% of issues for 3 were billing related. Have you ever got let's just check Telstra at the same time we're talking about bills. Telstra Big Pond, Telstra Corporation. They're about the same. How about that? 18.7 for Hutchison's and 18.9 for Telstra. And just because we want to keep it, let's go number 2.
So Optus. That's the percentage of all the complaints that were related to billing, is it?
Yeah, Optus. Optus didn't score too good in mobile billing, 22.2%. So they were the worst. But anyway, go and have a bit of a look. There's a few other interesting statistics in there as well. So if you're trying to choose a company. And I guess one thing you've got to take into consideration too is the total percentage of customers compared to one organisation to another.
I was going to ask that, yeah. Do they give the number of complaints as a percentage of the number of total customers?
Because I don't believe the TIO would have that information at hand. Mm. So
you might find that you could have 100,000 complaints for a major carrier would be the equivalent of 10,000 complaints for a smaller one.
Mm. Potentially. Dodo.
Yes. Well...
So, yes, there you go. Anyway, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Dr. Ron Andrew McComb in this evening. Graham Callaghan is here as well. Mark Diggins used to be a regular on the show. I haven't seen him for a day or two. He's going to be moving on fairly shortly and returning. He will come back. He's going to go and work and live and harass the people in Boston. So we're going to have another correspondent in the United
another
States.
Another export.
Yes. Yes, he's done his deed over here. So he's going to go and build 3G networks for the Americans. Watch out. Here he comes.
So the technical expertise flows from Australia to the US. But the management expertise in terms of all the CEOs travels from the US to Australia.
I don't know. Maybe
is that the way it works?
That's what it's looking like.
Yes, draw your own conclusions there. By the way, if you've got something to say on this topic, vent on the forum, forum.techtalkradio.com.au.
That's correct. Right.
That's it. Yeah, good. Or else, while we're on air, feel free to text us or SMS us or whatever you like, email as well. Michael Fields is in fine form tonight. Hello, Michael. I think he's in Queensland, I think, by recollection. He has, regarding the www in front of web pages, an interesting page is on www.9msn.com.au, where they've been deliberately
where they have deliberately used the prefix to promote their wide world of sport. There you go. So they're using the WWOS, according to Michael.
There you go.
So thanks for that, TARDIS 3.
Another thing you could potentially do if you do have multiple servers, you use web dot. There's no reason why you have to use WWW for your web server.
No, it's just an alias, isn't it? It could be anything.
It's just tradition that it's WWW, but if you had said web.techtalkradio.com.au, that's quicker to say than WWW.
Mm. Forget the industrial relations and interest rates. For many voters in regional and rural Australia, broadband could be the election issue that decides who gets their vote.
There you go.
Is this what it's coming down to in the rural side of things? Despite some lucky Australians having access to broadband with speeds up to 30 megabits per second, the picture isn't that rosy once you step outside of Sydney or Melbourne, let alone 5 kilometres to the east of the city of Melbourne. they're talking about the Telstra HFC, the what does that stand for?
Hybrid fibre and coax.
That's it.
Mm.
That's the black stuff which Optus strung up in the street in most of the cities, and the black stuff which is in the ground for Telstra. They've managed to crack 30 megabits per second out of it, which is just slightly faster than ADSL2's best if you're very close to a telephone exchange. So. That's what they're talking about. But, there's a bit of a brouhaha, or the storm is rising in the rural side of things because they want their broadband. And we're going to talk about this later on in the show too, that what people are wanting to do on broadband now is becoming quite interesting in respect to the fact that they do need the bandwidth for it, and can they get it?
Oh, it's absolutely essential for most businesses running in this day and age. And just because you happen to be running a farm that happens to be outside of the city in a rural area doesn't mean that you don't need broadband connection. You don't need to have high-speed data going to and from the people that are buying your product, the people that are doing the quality management of your output, those sorts of things. That's vitally important.
And even more so, there'd be a reliance on technology for like monitoring systems and things like that, especially on farms.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yep.
But even if you think about infrastructure, you look at river levels and heights and things like that, that could all be data back over through
wireless
networks.
Weather information.
Yeah. Yeah.
The whole range of things, yeah.
So it is. It's quite important in the bush.
It could be, but it won't be with 33 kilobits per second dial-up modem speeds. This is the problem.
No.
How many people... Do you know anyone who still uses a modem? We digress.
I do know where there are dial-up modems set up for remote diagnostics for security, like from a security point of view. They don't put systems on the internet.
I had to use my dial-up modem last weekend when my internet was down. That was very
good. I'll be using mine at work very shortly too. I'll take one in, see if I can find one.
That's sad. It's sad. Yeah, no, I don't know anyone who uses a dial-up modem to access the internet anymore other than Graham's flashing
the
pan.
I know a few people that use them to dial into, in particular, one bank's runs a banking system where you don't connect to the internet, you dial directly into their banking servers.
Yeah, yep.
And well, they're people still being used. Things like that, and that's a security issue, of course.
Yeah, the only thing I use old modems for at the moment is for faxes, for people that insist on sending me a fax, because I don't send them. They all go as PDFs these days. I think most people do that, don't they? Or am I just you're just
a lot of people still using faxes.
A lot of people still using faxes.
Are they?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I won't go out on a limb then.
with modems, an organisation I used to work for had about maybe 1,500 sites around Australia where they had a server that they provided remote maintenance for, and they used to actually dial into each of those sites to do the maintenance. They didn't rely on the internet.
Yeah,
for connectivity.
Well, these days, of course, you would do that. You'd come in through their internet router.
Well, you'd look at that probably as a first option, wouldn't you? So,
All right. The Androids are coming. Did you know?
Androids.
Google and their Androids.
No?
Yeah, no, there are. Yes, well, have a listen. Here's this week's View from the Couch. Adam will tell us all about the Androids.
Adam Turner's View from the Couch on Tech Talk Radio.
Google has unleashed a killer Android, and it would seem resistance is futile. Android is Google's new Linux-based operating system for mobile phones, to rival Symbian, Windows Mobile, and of course OS X thanks to the iPhone. A few years ago I would have added Palm OS to that list, but not anymore. There's been talk of a Google phone for a long time. The aim, of course, is to put advertising on the smaller screen, which one assumes would subsidise the cost of the phone and your calls. It will also naturally play nicely with Google's growing stable of location-based services such as Google Maps. The big question is the so-called Google phone still to come, or will Android just assimilate existing hardware manufacturers? Rather than release the definitive Google phone like the iPhone, I'd say Google is more likely to license its OS to manufacturers such as HTC, which makes the iMate and DoPod range of smartphones. HTC has already announced it will release a device running Android in the European market next year. Until now, HTC devices have generally run the clunky Windows Mobile operating system, so Android is yet more bad news for Microsoft. Google will also be quick to release a software developer's kit and will certainly be much easier to deal with than Apple and the iPhone. Apple insists on controlling everything, the hardware, the software, so it refuses to license its operating system to other manufacturers and is very difficult to deal with when you're writing software for their platform. While this improves system stability, it also ensures that Apple remains a niche player. Google knows that hardware is irrelevant. Google also knows the operating system is irrelevant, and even the software is really irrelevant. It's all just a means to an end. Content and services are what it's all about. Android and the concept of the Google phone are just a platform that make it easy for people to consume Google services whilst looking at ads. Nothing else matters. The network is also becoming irrelevant, much to the dismay of telcos such as Telstra, who want to own the customer. As telecommunications becomes commoditized, Telstra doesn't want to just shift ones and zeros, it wants to offer services and content as well. As such, I'd expect to see Android phones available on the Hutchison 3 network before Telstra's next G. As for the iPhone, it might have slick graphics and a touchy-feely interface, but if Android tightly integrates Google services into a mobile device, then it will lay waste to the competition. Steve Jobs may have carried the iPhone down from the Mount Moses style, but I'd say an army that marches behind Android is invincible.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Compelling.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
Judicious.
The question is really whether young people particularly are addicted to being connected to other people all the time.
Historical.
Today is a very important day in Australia's history. This is the day, the 6th of October, in 2006, that life in Australia will be changed forever.
Caring.
I know as a parent, I would often say to my children, you've just spoken to this person for 8 hours at school, how can you sit online and chat to them for another 5 hours?
You heard of road rage?
What about web rage?
They should be wearing a mask and carrying a gun.
Relations between Telstra and the federal government have been extremely strained almost from the moment Sol Trujillo became chief executive.
Optus had again had quite a good quarter, but its 3G service is very low profile at the moment.
And the Queen's got an iPod.
Betty's got one.
Yeah.
I wonder what she listens to. She'll probably listen twice.
An unexpectedly high number of voters swamped the system. Well, what did they expect?
Controversial.
Less attention is paid to the equally interesting question, should journalists blog?
Magical.
And I've got some residual powers.
Ambitious.
High-speed broadband, it's available in most of Asia as well as being in the rest of the world. Let's just make sure that we can get it in Australia this year, not next.
Religion.
Talking for the Roman Catholics, I have been on Vatican Radio.
Comedy.
And you put the date on ePray, it goes, and you get a whole service. Just on it. How does it go? It goes.
Insightful, entertaining, and informative. Tech Talk Radio. More than just technology.
It's a strictly rehearsed and finely polished program.
Listening to Tech Talk Radio.
And you might be watching Tech Talk Radio too. Hello there, we'll wave to the webcam. It's refreshing quite well every minute or so. You can see what we're up to in the studio as we speak. Dr. Ron looking at his mobile telephone, looking at a webcam picture. That's very impressive, Dr. Ron.
Yeah, it's making me nervous over there, right. Though. I keep glancing over to make sure it's, you know...
Big brother.
See what it's pointing at, yeah.
Big brother in the corner. We need a longer video lead. We can't quite get us all in at the moment, so we'll wave against
it. We need a wide-angle lens, too.
Yes, and if you're wondering, the numbers on the bottom of the screen, there's a clock.
Is there?
And it's in GMT time, so it's GMT 09, 49, 59 or something. So Greenwich Mean Time. I could have put in local time, but there might be someone watching us from the other side of the world. TechTalkRadio.com.au/webcam if you want to have a look. Oh, yes. Ooh, scary. There it goes again. Hey, let's talk a little bit about Australians. They want web. They want TV access on their mobiles.
No, not at 50 cents per megabyte. We don't. I'm here to tell you, son.
It's a very valid observation that you make that. And yes, in a bit of respect, you've stolen my thunder.
Oh, sorry about that.
Why don't people want internet? Because of what Dr. Ron said. You got to pay, you got to, you know, chop your left leg off and yes.
Pay through the nose.
Mobile broadband in this country is not what you call cheap, but nonetheless. And that's another thing, too. I quite often wonder, like, the difference between, let's say, for example, Hutchison 3, where you get, for $29, you can buy 1 gigabyte of bandwidth. And if you don't use one of their network cards, you can only get 5 megabytes of bandwidth for $10. Like, where's the... it's got to be a business model doing that, not a common sense model, if you ask me.
Strange, isn't it? Yeah. Very strange.
1 in 2 Australians want to access the internet over their mobile phone, while more than a third want to view live television, according to a study. Pity there's no television worth watching, but nonetheless, internet access was the most popular form of content desired by 52% of respondents, followed by live TV. They managed to be 37% of those questioned, and TV clips, 31%. While half those surveys want to use their phones to watch the news and check the weather, the most popular content was entertainment news, nominated by 58%. Entertainment news being something like, I guess, what you see Rove does from time to time, you know, that woman who does the news and funny sort of thing. You know, that sort of comedic sort of... It must be what people do on trains, trams, buses, airplanes, sitting in airports. While they're having their lunch, waiting in the dentist, they want a bit of a laugh.
They want... Yes.
Well, you got that of John, you got that of John Howard or Kevin Rudd, or, you know, like, that's depressing at the moment, isn't it?
I haven't looked at my mobile telephone in the dentist for a while.
Haven't you?
No.
It's only good when you're sitting there and you've been there for, you know, you're on time, and 3/4 of an hour later, you're still sitting there going, I could be on my way and doing other things, but no, you're still... I surf the web a lot on my mobile device while I'm in the dentist. Sorry.
How much time do you spend at the dentist?
Not long, but they always keep you waiting for 3/4 of an hour before you go in.
I've just decided not to go to the dentist ever again.
Smile to the webcam, will you?
Because you notice when you go to the dentist and they always find something to do, even if there's nothing wrong.
Oh, yeah.
You go for a checkup and you say, there's nothing for you to do here. It's just a regular routine, you know, it's clean and double check and inspection. And they go, oh, that looks bad. Oh, no, no, no. We're going to have to, oh, I haven't seen one of them before. Hang on a minute. And you think, oh, God, what did I come here for? So I've decided now, if something's worrying me, I'll go. If it's not...
Yeah. Well, the other thing, too, is when you think you get out scot-free, and they go, well, everything's great, but I'll just do an x-ray before you go. And you go, no! Anyway, we're not here to talk about dentistry. I'm sure we'll get lots of people...
Oh, you haven't got private health insurance. Oh, well.
Yes, well, you might need private technological insurance if you browse your mobile on certain carriers without... especially if you are a 3 customer and you do tend to roam on Telstra's network, you'll get a fairly big surprise on your bill. But they do tell you about it up front. But I think it's interesting that Australians do want to watch web and TV access on their mobiles. I can just see it now, you know, when you put your claim in for your motor vehicle accident because you ran into the back of someone because you're watching, you know, the weather in your hands-free kit, you know, like.
Yeah, so I don't think that would be the ideal way to use it in the car, I think, unless you're a passenger or, you know, I think on public transport and, as you say, other situations like that are probably more to go.
I can probably see where you're coming from as well, Andrew, with looking at television or watching that sort of content while you're sitting on public transport or something like that, and people want light-hearted entertain, something that's going to entertain them, don't they, in the short term. They've got half an hour to kill. They're not going to be wanting to watch serious news necessarily.
While you are driving, you could listen to audio on demand on while you're driving along too. That,
well, you do that, don't you, Dr. Ron?
Over the web.
Pod listener.
You could even listen to this show that way.
Yeah. Although the ISPs do tend to, or should I say the phone carriers do tend to bundle their programs into certain packages these days.
What about sports?
Forbid you can get a Big Brother thing or something.
Yep. Sports highlights, things like that.
Cricket, big on 3 and all that sort of stuff. And motor racing, the V8s is big on Telstra and all that sort of thing. So, and don't forget, we've got the Olympic Games coming up very shortly.
Again?
Yes, next year, again. What do you mean again?
We just got over the game. Oh,
China.
It was the Commonwealth Games, wasn't it? We just got over.
That was 2 years ago in Melbourne.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
It seems like yesterday, doesn't it?
It does. But
time flies.
It's been 4 years since we've had an Olympics, or it will be by the time it comes around again.
You watch the mobile broadband packages come out to flog the Olympics.
Oh, absolutely, yes.
There'll be all sorts of things like that. Now, speaking of all those sort of good things, Foxtel, the pay TV provider in this country, who's finally managed to turn a profit, Mobile pay TV services look set to become the next growth area for pay TV group Foxtel, with the group almost doubling the number of channels on its mobile service as a result of strong demand. Foxtel Chief Executive Kim Williams told Media, that's an organisation, the pay TV operator was making a push for more interactivity and more truth to the reality of personalisation of media. What on earth does that mean?
I think it means that Australians want to watch television on their mobile phones.
I think so.
I think it means Foxtel wants Australians to want to watch TV on their mobile phones.
Well, I think there might be a happy coincidence there. I think I think Foxtel are finding ways to make it possible without it costing an arm and a leg. So,
how much of how much of Foxtel did Telstra own these days? Because they had a bit behind it, didn't they?
Yeah, quite a lot. Don't they?
Well, there you go. I rest my case.
We are, of course, talking about streaming over mobile phone networks and data content.
Have you ever signed up to one of those packages? I've never been brave enough to on my mobile because it's never interested me.
Well, I've got the $5 for 10 megabytes on my package.
But that's data, though. Have you signed up to any of the television channels?
No, I haven't bothered.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know anyone who has, but I guess it must be big.
Do they stream over the data channel or do they use the digital broadcasting for mobiles type standard?
No, my understanding is they use the streaming option, Graham. And this is what I was alluding to. There is, of course, another digital television standard, which is
designed for mobiles.
Exactly right, Andrew. And exactly right, Graham.
Yeah, it's a handheld device.
Yeah, digital video broadcasting handheld, as opposed to digital video broadcasting terrestrial, which is what we get to our set-top box sitting in our living room.
So with that model, what they're doing in parts of Europe is that you actually have a television receiver built into your mobile phone. That's completely separate to the mobile phone technology, but it will pick up TV signals, just like your normal television in your living room will, and you can actually watch TV, free-to-air TV, but it's digital, and it comes in your mobile phone. But we haven't seen any of that stuff here in Australia.
No, they're streaming it over the data channel, which has got to be an expensive way for them to do.
Well, I would have thought
wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Well, it depends whether it's like streaming audio on the internet, I would have imagined, because there's multicasting and unicasting. Multicasting being one, it's like a radio station. You transmit it from one location and it just goes out. It broadcasts. There's no handshaking or anything like that. Whereas I think the unicasting is a one-to-one type sort of thing. Here, Ron, here's your packet. And you go, yeah, thanks.
Can you let me know when you've got it and I'll send you the next one.
And I reckon that would be a fairly expensive model. But the broadcasting side of things I think could be quite beneficial for them. Anyway.
Interesting.
The Foxtel press release also says that it's understood that the channel will be beamed to Telstra mobiles as soon as it launches on Foxtel early next year, just in time for the Olympics. I added that bit. But there you go. Alrighty. The other interesting thing too this week, which surprised me a little bit, domain names. They're fairly popular in Australia. In fact, they had a bit of a surge.
That surprised you?
Well, it did actually, compared to the rest of the world. It means that we're obviously getting fairly aggressive in marketing our domains or marketing our businesses or marketing anything, I guess, or getting out there in the cyberspace. So the number of .au domain name registrations will hit 1 million very shortly, according to Australia's registry operator. So there you go, over a million .com. Didn't you have something recently, Dr. Ron, about the millionth website?
That was
TechTalkRadio.mobi, I think.
That was
heard the
10 billionth website
in
the world.
Well, that must have been 10 years ago.
Yeah. So this is names actually registered in the .au domain space.
Yeah.
Now, part of the reason for this will be that the rules changes that have happened in the .au domains.
What changes?
That have happened. Oh, the changes have been progressive and there's nothing terribly recent in the changes, but I think people are taking more advantage of it. In the old days, back when we were first getting going with the internet, there were fairly tight rules on how you could use a .au domain name. It had to be a registered business name or directly derived from it. No, there's other ways. It can be directly related to a product you supply or a trademark that you own
or
a campaign that you're running. Yeah, so they've loosened those up quite a bit.
Yeah, you still need to have an ABN.
You still need to have an ABN, but your domain name doesn't have to be your business name or directly connected from it. If you're selling widgets, you can try and get Widgets R Us
It has to be close to the whatever it is.
It has
selling.
To be
but not
related.
Literally the domain name or the product name anymore.
No. So you can go out and you can get the domain name to match a campaign that you're running or a service you're providing rather than necessarily...
It's yourfuture.com.au.
That's one sort of thing.
I got one of those for the state government campaign I did in the not-too-distant past.
There you go.
I tried to register a .org.au about 8 months
hard.
Ago. They're very difficult. I gave up in
rules
the end.
Rules still quite tight on that, yeah.
Very, very tight. Yeah, it was a family name that I was trying to register, .org.au.
Yeah, you almost have to be a charity or you have your organisational status.
Well, they were doing that type of work and I thought that it would be acceptable and I bounced...
Well, if they've got the status to, you know, some sort of an organisation.
You need a certificate. You do. I've done these. They're very difficult, but you can get them.
Yeah, but you can't just... The point is, you can't just go to a website, can you, and just say, oh, I think that's a nice domain name. I'll register that. You do have to be able to actually justify your application.
Too right.
Mm.
Since 2002, the number of commercial.au names has risen by over 750,000. That's not bad, really. And I think a lot of that has to do with protecting your identity online.
Yes.
If you have a good business or you have a business name, one of my customers runs an art gallery and he registered his artgallery.com.au and he actually had registered the .com version of it as well, but he let that lie and didn't renew it. And then all of a sudden, somebody else got it and they put up all sorts of links to other art galleries and things like that.
Ah,
yep. So they sort of stole his thunder. And I guess it's the same thing. It's like registering names which are very similar to yours in case your competitors try and get hold of them. Misspellings and things like that too in a domain name, which means that if the .com.au namespace is a bit easier to use, you can, yeah, they're cheap. They're what, $40 for 2 years or something, aren't they?
Mm. Not as cheap as the .coms, but they're still fairly cheap.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about search. We had a bit of a chat to Lydia last week about search engines and the likes. This week, we're going to move down the road a little bit in Mountain View, and we're going to Yahoo.
So we're talking about Microsoft last week.
We did.
Live search.
Hugh Williams was online. And a big cheerio to Hugh's dad, who lives locally to us and listens to us on the pod as well. Yes, we had Hugh on the radio show last week, and this week it's time for Yahoo. Next week we'll be talking to Google. And basically, Lyd caught up with Tim Mayer, who is basically runs Google's search type sort of thing.
Yahoo's.
Sorry, Yahoo's, thank you. let me stop getting into trouble and run the interview. Here's Lyd with Tim.
I'm sitting here with Tim Mayer from Yahoo Search. Just generally about the search engine, how's it evolved in the last, I don't know, 5 years, 10 years?
Yeah, I mean, we first had, you know, all search engines looked pretty much the same. You had 10 textual links with some ads, textual ads around those algorithmic listings. And it was very hard to distinguish between the search results. People were typically trying to optimize, trying to, you know, crawl the entire web, get as large an index as possible, and make sure that the best result got up to the top of the page. And that was really what most search engines were focused on. And then sort of the second stage, search engines were trying to really, I guess a consumer way of describing it, trying to read the mind of the consumer and understand what, if the consumer was asking a question, what the answer is for that. Or if you asked about for some information, we would give that information right on the search page. So that was sort of the next phase of search. And some of the examples of that are you put in a ticker symbol for a stock quote, and mm-hmm. we give you what the most recent price is, as well as a chart right on the page, where you ask weather San Francisco, and it would give you the weather for the next 3 days right on the search page.
So you don't have to go further. That's just easier for the user.
Yeah, it's easier for the user, and it's giving than what they want very quickly.
Yep.
And then I think the third stage, which we're moving into, is really understanding the user's query and intent even better and understanding from which sources users may be looking for content in. What might be the best source to answer the question? So you might be looking at different verticals, such as local. Might if you're looking for a restaurant, or you might be have a question where the best answer to the question may come from a video.
Mm-hmm.
So you might be looking to how to do a household task or how to regrip golf clubs, where seeing a video might be a much better answer than something you'd get from a textual search response.
How do you determine what would be the best for the user?
I mean, I think a lot of it comes down to, you know, we look at. We try and understand, looking at the query, what, you know, based on the content that may be coming back, but also just in terms of, you know, you can look at user behavior to try and understand, you know, are there a lot of queries coming in to new search of this particular kind recently? Are there a lot of things about this topic that are coming through news streams, that would be reported in the news, and things like that might, those sort of signals might help you understand if some topic is particularly newsworthy, and if it's worth giving back news results in response to that type of query.
So it's a constant effort of, you know, watching what's happening and changing.
Especially in the case of news, where things are changing so quickly,
yeah.
Right? Whereas if you search for a celebrity, typically, you know, people, or a music artist, right? People, for music artists, we know people typically want things like lyrics, song lyrics. They want to watch videos. They want to listen to music. They want to see concert dates. Those are the sort of things if you type in a music artist. And we see that through logs. We look at what people are searching for on specific topics, and we see what types of things. So, you know, people type in Madonna lyrics or Madonna concerts often, or Madonna videos. Like, we know those are the sort of things people are looking for most frequently when they search for some music artist.
Now, that's interesting you say that, you know, Madonna lyrics, because now the search query is becoming longer.
I think users are becoming more confident with their queries. Search engines are getting better at responding to longer queries. So it has been growing. It grows rather slowly. In the past couple of years, it's gone, we see 2.7, 2.8, 2.9, 2.9 words per query on average. But with our new query assist feature, we're seeing a bunch of people typing in longer queries, because it tends to help people get to what they want much more quickly by finding the right query.
How important are aesthetics for search?
Well, I think one of the things we've done with the last release is really make our search experience look fundamentally different than before. You know, they'd be on yahoo.com and they would type in the address bar, and they'd do a search through the address bar, and then they'd end up on another search engine and they still think they were on Yahoo because the search experience looked so similar. They didn't even realize they had switched. So I think they did look, you know, things looked so similar before,
yeah.
But now we've really got a different look than a lot of our competition, with just the visual impact as well as the header and the interaction with the search assist, that, you know, when people go somewhere else, they might say, wow, I really missed that search assist feature. Where am I? Right? And then they'll hopefully go to Yahoo and say, oh, this is where I go to get this help.
Tell me about search assist and why it's so much better now.
People don't think they're very good searchers. Even if you get people that are, you know, you look at them, they're reasonably advanced compared to everyone else. And we see the customer satisfaction of search engines is extremely high, typically between 80 and 90%. When they get bad results, they think it's actually their fault for not putting in the right query. They don't think it's the search engine's fault. And search engines typically give bad responses quite a bit of the time. And if there was another product with a similar failure rate, it wouldn't have nearly as high a satisfaction rate. So this is really helping people, you know, find that right query. It helps with misspellings. It helps people that type in something very general.
One of the things that I like about Yahoo is it seems that better able to keep duplicate content out. And I suppose not duplicate, but I suppose the way that you may go to one search engine and you'll get, you know, the first seven results will be from the same place, but just different parts of that place. Whereas you guys seem to be able to say, okay, you've got these 10 options or 8 options or 20, whatever it is, up front. How do you do that?
We have, I mean, there are a couple of things at play. One is we do duplicate detection. That's not, you know, every search engine will try and do that with different, you know, similar or different methods. We have...
And rates of success as well.
Obviously. Right, but we also restrict the number of results that come from a particular host or computer.
What about blogs?
We have sub-daily crawls where we're crawling blogs as well as other news or content that changes very frequently. So, you know, blogs are very important. And, you know, as we move forward, I think freshness and having very fresh content about what's going on now will become increasingly important to integrate news content as well as blogs. Because there are certain topics which are newsworthy in their own right, and newspapers cover them. And then there are other things like an iPhone patch, right?
Yeah.
Which, there's a new patch to the iPhone. That typically isn't covered by any news source,
yeah.
but it will be all over the blogs, and it will be something that people want to search for, want mm-hmm. to know about. So I think for those sort of breaking topics that aren't, they are newsworthy, but not with the mainstream press, that sort of content will be very important.
Are paid listings included in the results?
Paid listings aren't included anywhere in the search assist. The search assist, the paid listings are on the search page, and they just match, as usual, with the query.
Is that within the results, or is it beside the
results? It's besides the results. Okay. So we typically have all the paid results on the right side. But we have paid inclusion, which isn't sponsored search. It's actually people paying to get their listings, their algorithmic listings, refreshed on a more regular basis.
Okay.
So they get an SLA. So these might be corporations that might want an SLA to say, we want to make sure that you crawl our pages on a 24-hour basis. And these people always also get support. So if they're having technical issues or crawler problems, they can call someone at Yahoo and get support. So largely they're paying for an increased SLA.
Just Yahoo generally, do the same results appear in Australia as they do here in America?
They're actually different. The rankings will be slightly different in Australia than they would be in the US. Australian people tend to want different types of content and more locally targeted results.
Mm-hmm.
So in the US, there are probably a lot of Australian sites I wouldn't be interested in seeing if I typed in pizza restaurants. I wouldn't want a pizza restaurant in Sydney or Melbourne, right?
Yeah.
So we try and target users, and when they're coming from Australia, give them more Australian flavored results.
Tim, it's been lovely talking to you. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks very much.
There's a level of ignorance out there which isn't acceptable.
Mm.
Didn't John Howard drop past to get permission to call an election?
What did you use before NextG for data?
iBurst.
The screen is actually a lot larger than any of the previous iPod models.
We've spoken before about the trade-off between usability and security.
Apple have been accused of an unlawful monopoly.
No, say it's not true.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
You know, here we go again.
Tech Talk Radio.
So, yes, I think that's quite valid points, what he makes there about pizzas and things like that. You have to tailor your search engine. But one of the things which stood out for me there, which what Tim was saying, was paid inclusions. Have you come across those before, Dr. Ron, in any of your trawlings?
On Yahoo?
Oh, and anywhere.
On anywhere.
Because I know Google don't do that. You get, if you pay for it, it gets whacked over in the right-hand side or up on the top there.
You can usually... I'm a big Google user, and you can usually differentiate fairly easily between what is a sponsored link or a paid link and what's organic or what's a natural search
unless
result.
You're the ACCC, they seem to have some trouble.
They do, don't they?
That's bizarre, isn't it? But I haven't used Yahoo for a long time. Yahoo used to be my search engine of choice many years ago before Google was big.
Absolutely, yes, it was. It was the number one before Google came along.
Mm. Why is that? Why do you reckon they lost their market share?
Google did it better.
Yeah? Purely
yep.
because of that?
Purely because Google did it better.
So first in, best dressed, you reckon?
And I can remember drilling down...
And then get your act together and really capitalise. Sorry, go on.
That's right. I can remember drilling down through categories as well in Yahoo. They used to do
that. Was a good thing about
yeah.
Yahoo.
Yeah, and I used to use that a lot. So if you wanted to target a particular service or product, you'd actually go into that category and then look at the results at the end.
Yep.
Hmm. Okay. Well, now we've got paid inclusions and things. I wonder if they make sure that the viewer is aware or the browser is aware that
I'll be having a look at that
inclusion.
To see how that works.
Yes, but their paid inclusions, I think it's also to do with the fact that, what did he say? If you wanted to get a good ranking or you were having problems, you need to be listed in their search engine relatively quickly. They would help you do it type sort of thing. So,
anyway.
Thank you very much, Lydia. Thank you very much, Tim, for that. Next week, we're going to be having a bit of a listen to the Google perspective on the latest and greatest things in search engines and the likes.
So, that'll complete the big three in 3 weeks.
The big three
the
in 3 weeks.
The three big players in the search field.
Absolutely. Right here on Tech Talk Radio. We're going to take a break. And we'll be back with more after this.
You're listening.
Dr. Ron?
Here I am.
Listening.
Residual powers.
And I've got some residual powers.
You can't turn off CDMA.
In terms of the volume,
over a standard fingerprints.
Now, this
we may have digressed.
Talk radio.
Bill Burgess also claimed the country would remain behind.
We used to think 600 kilometers.
Don't open things
that are
good that you're not expecting, even if they do a thing like
it. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Subscribing to the Tech Talk Radio podcast is so easy.
It's child's play.
Podcasting's so easy, even my little brother can do it.
Step one, visit the iTunes Music Store and search for Tech Talk Radio in the podcast section. Step two, click subscribe and you're done. Now every week you'll be able to listen to Tech Talk Radio whenever, wherever and however you like. You could be mowing the lawn, on a train, in a car, on a plane, at work,
visiting the relatives, washing the car.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
That you are listening to Tech Talk Radio. Welcome back wherever you might be on the World Wide Web, the WWW, or, yes, the stream podding, all sorts of things. You're listening to Graham Callaghan, Dr. Ron and myself, Andrew McComb. And you can actually watch us tonight, too, on the webcam. Feel free to have a bit of a look. You can be one of the 650-odd people, which, come on, guys, Liv, we want to see the stats, crack 1,000.
Is that how many people have had a look at the site? That's ridiculous.
Yeah, well, 650 webcam viewers last in the 15 minutes of last week's show, because that's about all the time we got it set up for and all that, because people were sending us emails saying, where's the webcam?
I definitely would have done my hair and brushed my teeth if I'd known there were that many people tuning in.
Absolutely.
Oh, well.
Yes, welcome aboard, everyone. The just in Victoria at the moment, Victorian schools win a $9 million net boost. You know, the federal government has allocated $9 million to improve broadband in Victorian schools as part of its Connect Australia program. The money will be shared between the state's independent schools and its education department. That's got to be good, I wouldn't have thought. Kids and the internet, apart from the obvious. But it's the World Wide Web business where you research everything and do all that sort of stuff.
That's good. The thought's there. $9 million, drop in the ocean. We need $90 million.
You reckon?
Or $9 million a school or suburb or something. Yeah, it's $9 million, isn't it? I mean, it's really is dropping the ocean stuff.
Mm. I think it's still a good positive thing. Like
step in the right direction.
I've got a young girl who's going to go to school very shortly, and I went up and had a look at their school. They've got computers. They've got lots of them, and I think that's got to be good because she's pretty, you know, IT computer savvy as it is at the moment. She can destroy her mother's Vista laptop notebook. Had to fix that tonight by pulling the battery out and putting it back in again.
Oh, that's a pretty diabolical fix. What did she do?
I don't know. It wouldn't turn on.
If you knew that, you wouldn't have had to take the battery out.
But how'd it be fun being an IT guy at a school, wouldn't it? Like, as in looking after all the technology there?
No.
Why not?
I can't imagine doing that. I think at the end of every day...
I can imagine doing it, and I can tell you it's not fun.
No.
Because isn't there something called SchoolsNet or something? Is that part of the backbone or wherever the schools get their internet feed from? So partially it's all filtered and done correctly in the first place?
Oh, my information might be a little bit out of date, but there is a common network that they're all connected to. It used to be called VIC-1. I'm not sure whether it still is.
Yeah.
And then there's various ISPs that connect to the schools through that backbone network. And I think SchoolsNet was one of those. And they provide various different filtering
Is it a state-based thing, do you know, or is it a federal-based thing?
It's a state-based, yep. The ones I've
had dealings with have been a state. Does it differently?
Well, I've only dealt with the Victorian ones.
I wonder why. Yes, when you think just economy of scale, you'd have it all together like a
federal
department.
Well, the education departments are state-based.
Well, that's true, isn't it?
That's the reason.
One of the legacies of the great system we have here, isn't it? Maybe federally that's something they could have a bit of a look at down the track.
Well, I think that kicking some money in is the start of trying to have some influence over perhaps standardising things or equalising access between different states that have got different levels of access.
Yeah.
That's probably where they're thinking of going.
It would be very difficult, I think, maintaining that sort of network in a lot of respects. At least they're connected, unlike us at the office at the moment. But anyway, that's another story. Looking for a job in IT at the moment. Apparently, the job ads are up at Seek. This is the online, how would you describe Seek? It's a website where you can go looking
online
for jobs,
job
any type of jobs.
Seek.com.au.
Anything from A to Z, really. So people are really turning to the internet at the moment. James Packer, the chairman of Australia's biggest online job advertising group, Seek, expects the drift of employment advertising from newspapers to the internet to continue, enabling the group to post another strong result in 2008. Speaking at the group's AGM the other day, shareholders were told that since the 30th of June, the online job ad volume had increased from 193,000 to 208,908 at October 28th, further consolidating the group's top 10 position. So it just goes to show these days, everyone who's looking for a job hits the web.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
I haven't even looked in one of the local Saturday papers these days to see what's going around. You get a lot of those big corporate contract positions there, but I think your average PAYG type position is all on Seek these days. I don't know. Dr. Ron, you've looked at these things from time to time. What's the deal there? Do you find a lot of, contract positions there, or are they all...
You do. Yeah, you do. I might be a bit of a strange anomaly. However, I think most of the jobs that I seem to have picked up over the years have been in the traditional
advertisements. So you didn't get your current job as a result of an ad in Seek?
No. Let me think about that carefully. No, I don't think so. No. But I have spent a lot of time on Seek. I've spent a lot of time on Career One. I've spent a lot of time on...
Are they different?
YourCareer.com.au. They're all very similar,
Andrew. Spent a lot of time on Facebook.
I've spent a lot of time on Facebook. I've never actually got a job from spending time on Facebook.
See, now you've done
your mission, should you choose to accept it.
That's exactly it. Now, they are all very similar. They all have... areas where you can register yourself and register your experience, qualifications, what you're interested in. If you're a job hunter, you don't actually have to be unemployed. A lot of people who are in their jobs but maybe getting a bit restless or wanting to see what else is around.
Absolutely,
they make themselves available on sites like Seek.
Yeah, that's a good opportunity. A good use of internet technology in a lot of respects, isn't it?
Mm.
It's a great way. And the way they do things, employers can talk to Seek and they just lodge all their stuff and the IT recruitment companies. Yeah, good place.
The other great thing is that they have CV builders.
Do they? Mm. Handy.
Very handy. So if you have never actually put together a CV before, these sites will often talk you through assembling one and getting it ready. And you can make it available online to prospective employers, or you can print it out and use it in the real world if you're doing the door knocking.
Well, it's obviously proving to be a very successful type of facility, everyone using it for jobs. And I guess, the demise of the Saturday paper, because that's where it all used to be.
Yes, you'll no longer get half a rainforest delivered fresh to your door every Saturday morning.
Got
to
be good, really, in a lot of respects, doesn't it? Save the planet and all. Mobiles. Let's talk briefly about Optus, because we haven't spoken about them for a while. Optus lifted its mobile and broadband performance in a steady half-year result, despite margins deteriorating in the mobiles and consumer businesses. It's getting pretty cutthroat out there, isn't it? Why are you saying these things, boys?
We just haven't heard from Optus for a while. We went, yay, and then you said, despite...
Now, the telco added 65,000 customers in a campaign aimed at my main rival, Telstra. Well, that wouldn't be too hard, I wouldn't have thought. Although, I must admit, the 3G offering in Optus is still very much by stealth. I've not heard much
about
it.
That was exactly what I was about to say. In the 3G market, you hear about Telstra and you hear about Hutchison, who run the 3 network.
Yeah, and Vodafones and stuff like that.
Yeah, but do you hear from Optus?
No, they're too busy out in the zoo. Whatever they do. They've got a product called Zoo. I just refuse to look at things which has got animals, lions,
and the giraffe
tigers.
That can't get into the underground car park. Yeah. What's that about? How does that help me get on the phone?
Excuse me here, but I'm a bit over their campaign. Like, ever since Optus has been in this country, which seems like nigh an eternity now, all we've ever seen is animals on the television.
Wild animals. Yeah.
Yes. Come on, let's change the advertising, guys. And what's that thing? Yes. Well, yes.
Yes.
The number two telco posted its best mobile numbers for 2 years. It added 65,000 contract customers and the highest number of new broadband customers since 2005. I must admit, Dr. Ron and I, we vacated from the Optus cable network early in the piece, if I remember correctly, once they decided to get the thumb screws out.
We were on there for quite a while. It was a good service for a long time.
It was great before they capped it. We were doing some great file transfers locally, and then all of a sudden, nah, sorry, can't do that anymore.
Mm.
So, anyway, there you go. There's a bit of news from Optus, so don't say we don't say anything really about them. Anyone here an Optus mobile customer? No?
No.
Okay.
No.
All right, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. We better take a break. We'll be back with more after this.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Have you heard something on Tech Talk Radio worth talking about? Are you looking to share your technical dilemmas or opinions with like-minded Tech Talk Radio listeners? Well, now you can. Introducing the Tech Talk Radio web forum. Visit forum.techtalkradio.com.au and join our community. It's free and on a web browser near you. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Well, we have to stop the show about spam in the studio and talk about other things. So we were just commenting about the rise of spam. It's really becoming a bit of a joke. In fact, one of the things I was actually going to talk to you guys about tonight was overprotection. Do you think we can overprotect ourselves online?
Yes.
From spam or from anything.
Yeah, some people are impossible to get an email through to, Andrew.
No. I'm not that bad, am I? Oh, dear. The reason why I say that is because, like, developing web stuff, I run, obviously, you've got the inbound filters coming into your system through your broadband pipe. Then on your actual local machines, you've got things like Kaspersky's, you've got your antivirus program, your anti-this, your anti-that.
Yep.
I'm finding that even when I'm doing web development and things like that, I actually have to turn Kaspersky's off so I can see what I'm doing. Now, do you find that that's a problem?
Yeah, I don't think you can overprotect yourself from a security point of view, but what you are going to find happens is that your machines are just going to become unusable because you've got so much software running and so many things that are there in place that you can't do stuff.
It is. I'm finding that that's the case.
I don't have a problem with running maybe two different spam protections, that you've got one server-based running one product and another one on your workstation running a different product. So in my case, I've got a lot of systems where we run Spam Assassin on the boundary, and then the machines themselves will either be running Outlook 2003 or they'll be running Thunderbird, both of which have got very good internal spam protections as well. And what one doesn't catch, the other will, because they're quite different. But to run more than one on your workstations, or that is going to get to bog your machine down and slow things down.
What about running firewalls, Graeme, on machines that are inside an already firewalled network?
That's a good question, actually.
You often come across a Windows firewall is running and you can't do something. You think, well, why do I need Windows firewall running on this computer? I'm inside a corporate network. It should be firewalled already.
Yes and no. Depends how well locked down your network is. Do you have people bringing their home machines in and connecting it to the wireless network? Do you have, a local firewall on your machine might save you from getting an internal spread of some malware through your network? Sometimes it's useful to have that, particularly if you haven't got a tightly locked down network with your own IT department on site.
Mm.
It's funny, isn't it? Because I'm just sitting here looking at the browser on the desktop. Adam got me involved with AdBlock Pro. He said, "Oh, yep. This is really good." Anyway, I've run it up, and combination of AdBlock Pro, which blocks all those annoying banner ads, and it does a very good job of it, I might say, as well as Kaspersky Antivirus. You can load up a web page and there's no pictures. And I'm going, damn, I can't see what I'm doing. So you have to sort of like just turn you off for a minute.
Yes, you might be over-filtering there, Andrew. You might need to wind something back a bit.
If people are paranoid about filtering and things like that, it's just, yes, over-filtering. It's a bit of a worry. By the way, how much legit mail do you find in a junk email? Do you look through there? Or do you just go, oh, there's 623 in there, delete, and just delete your deleted bin or whatever you've done?
Yeah, I have to say, I don't go looking through my junk email anymore unless there's something specific that I've lost.
Do you find that some mail clients work better than others when it comes to getting through a mail filter? Like, for example, I have some members of my family who insist on using Internet... What's the cutdown of Outlook? Internet...
Outlook Express,
that's the one. And for some strange reason, it never... Always my sister's emails, I'm sorry. They always end up in the trash can. Even I've put her in a whitelist, but no, they always end up in the Outlook junk email folder. Whereas people that send from Outlook, if she uses her Outlook client, it's fine. Do you find that at all, that when they come from certain clients? Or have I just got...
I haven't noticed that.
I've got an extremely picky mail... So if you sent me emails, yes. But Dr. Ron here, I heard the other day, was going to declare email bankruptcy, weren't you?
I was going to declare email bankruptcy. Yeah, emails.
What do you mean by that?
What I mean by that is that you just get so many messages, you just get to the point whereby you can't... It's not usable anymore. You're just getting completely overwhelmed, completely swamped.
So you go into your inbox, select all, delete, and start again.
Yeah. And you send an email to everyone and
you can't do that in business, I'm
afraid. You just
say,
look, I'm really...
If you've sent me an email in the last year and a half, I didn't
important.
Get it. Just, it's
gone. I'm not being rude. Just send it to me again if it's important. Otherwise, don't bother. Because, and you especially notice that when you've been away, like if you've been on holidays, if you've been travelling and you haven't been checking your email when you've been travelling, for example, and everybody knows what that feeling's like. You come into the office after you've been away for 4 weeks.
Try a cup day long weekend or something like that.
This is it. And you turn
turn to send and receive mail and here they come.
Yeah, and it says, the email client starts downloading 185 messages and you think, well, that's the next 2 hours of my life. I'm just going to be sitting here drinking coffee, reading emails, but...
You got a great job.
It is, but it is a serious issue. The other thing I was going to say, Andrew, about can you overprotect yourself? There's one thing in the computer world
it's a bit like an insurance policy, isn't it? You know, you don't have enough content.
Yeah,
or you have too much.
There's one thing that just does not work in the computer world, and that is if you have more than one antivirus program installed.
Oh yes, never, not on the same machine.
Not on the same machine. You can have one antivirus program and pick whatever it is that takes your fancy that you think is usable and useful to yourself, and stick with that one. Don't load Symantec and Kaspersky and...
Well, Kaspersky won't run on. It's very good. I find Kaspersky a fantastic uninstaller for getting antivirus programs of your machine.
The issue is that part of an antivirus program functioning correctly is that it's going to contain what they call templates and images of viruses. So if it finds something that's suspect on your computer, it can compare it with this table and find out if that is actually a virus.
So they go around deleting their own tables.
Well, they will. This is it. You're going to have one antivirus program looking at the tables and the other one saying, whoa, that all looks really bad, and throw up lots of these warnings, which are completely bogus.
Yeah, but they also do technical things like linking into the network, what's called the network stack, in a very specific place. And if more than one tries to make that sort of link, they can end up fighting each other for control of your network connection as well.
Hmm.
And that can be really bad. That can be really, really bad.
So when it comes to anti-spyware, when it comes
Kaspersky does that too.
When it comes to spam and everything, no, you can't over-protect yourself in a technical sense, but with antivirus software, you can.
Mm. Watch out with mobile broadband connections too, because I don't know whether it's me or the way I've got my laptop configured, but it'll go for the local area network or the wireless connection first for getting broadband and internet. And as soon as you put your network card in, it says, oh, there's a dialer connected. Watch out. And there's all sorts of interesting things. But anyway, let's talk about the rundown, shall we?
Okay.
Web helps Queensland police rescue kids. How about this? Routine monitoring of the internet by Queensland police sparked an international operation which has led to the rescue of 24 children worldwide, including a 4-year-old Brisbane girl whose grandfather allegedly molested her for 2 years and recorded the thing and put it up on the internet. This has got to be good, isn't it? I don't envy the guys that do this sort of job, you know, trawling the net looking for all this sort of stuff.
You'd have to look at some pretty disturbing things on the internet, too.
Absolutely.
But, yep, at the end of the day, they're doing a good job.
The investigation, dubbed Operation Koala by European police because of its Australian origins, has led to more than 100 arrests in Europe and 9 in Queensland. Investigations into suspected members of the international pedophile ring are continuing in other states. So, watch out. They're watching you out there. There must be, obviously, those who know what they're looking for can find it relatively or be conspicuous. I think they impersonate, you know, go in there and do what the others are doing.
I think that's one of the techniques they use. I don't think it's the only one. I think we're going to see a lot of improvements, hopefully, in the way that law enforcement worldwide deal with the internet, because it's an area that they have done badly in the past. And that people are starting to become very aware of what's needed there and the sort of cooperation needed across jurisdictions. And this is an example of that sort of thing going a lot better than it has in the past.
Yeah, it's like ISPs. Be good when they talk cross borders too. I mean, international borders, that is.
Yes.
So, anyway. Another interesting thing that came in the news this week, one laptop per child gets moving.
Yes, this is the $200, $100 laptop.
That's the ones, yeah. Low-cost computers meant to usher poor children worldwide into the digital age are being mass-produced in China. As US non-profit one laptop
probably
per child
labour.
Yes, all no doubt. And they're probably using bindis. They've probably got GBH. BGH? GBH. Dr. Ron, you know what it is.
Why do I know what it is?
I don't know.
These are the children's beads.
Yeah, they whack a couple of those in. Please do not eat your computer.
Yes, GHB is the drug that was inside the beads.
Is that what it is? GHB, yes. Yeah. Anyway, back to serious things. Out of China, these laptops, one per child, which will strive to deliver on its promise. The first of the XO laptops being built in a computer facility in China is destined for Uruguay, making a milestone for the charity group founded by a man in Massachusetts.
Mm.
So there you go. See, there are some people.
It's an interesting
doing some
device they've come up with. It's got a screen that sometimes is colour and sometimes is black and white. And yeah,
Sony Ericsson make those.
It's a fascinating device. Oh well, it's black and white if you need to read it in full sunlight. If you're reading it outside, if you don't.
Oh really? That's clever, isn't it?
Mm. Yeah, but it'll work. It's a fascinating device.
And in the African model, they didn't want to have a power pack and a power supply because they said, that's no use to us. We don't have electricity. What we need is one of those
solar thing or something.
No, the hand crank, you know, the little generator things.
So you've got a hand crank little dymo thing.
That's it, yeah. So that you can actually generate
charge up the battery and let it run. Yeah, it uses a fraction of the power, like a tenth of the power of a normal laptop.
That's
it. It's a clever device.
I just have to crank the little generator thing for 5 minutes an hour and it runs my laptop.
$200 is still pretty pricey, I think, for a lot of those people
it's still only $190 whatever dollars it is if you buy them in the thousands, if like a government buys them. So they've got a little way to go. But as they roll out, presumably the price will come down and the benefits of mass production will start to kick in and they'll get it down there.
Anyway, there's some good news to finish off the show. We're going to come back very shortly to the website gadget and odd spot of the week.
You're listening.
Dr. Ron?
Here I am. Listening.
Residual powers. And I've got some residual powers.
You can't turn off CDMA.
In terms of the volume,
motor sensitive fingerprints. Now, this
we may have digressed.
Talk radio.
Phil Burgess also claimed the country would remain behind.
We used to think 600 kilometers.
Don't open things that are good that you're not expecting, even if they do a thing like
it. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Tech Talk Radio wants your feedback. Call the Tech Talk Radio feedback line or visit our website and tell us your thoughts on the show. Tell us your likes and dislikes, your technical dilemmas and program suggestions. Call 1-300-664-882 and leave a voice message. That's 1-300-664-882 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, and click on the feedback link.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics!
Cool! Oh, this thing is amazing!
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
Son of a... Oh.
This week's gadget is a new operating system.
Oh, we need another one.
We do. Fedora 8.
Oh.
Has hit the streets.
That's fantastic news. As soon as I finish the podcast, I'll be downloading that.
Are the Androids bringing it?
They might be. Doesn't matter who's bringing it. Just get a hold of it. Fedora 8.
Fedora 8 and Androids available now.
And Androids.
Yeah. You weren't listening earlier on in the show.
No, I was. This was Adam's installment.
Sorry, go on.
Fedora 8 was released last week. It features GNOME 2.2.0, which is the desktop application.
Yep.
And CompiZ Fusion. Do you know what CompiZ Fusion is, Graham?
No, I don't know what that is. What's that about?
I don't know. We'll have to look that one up. Other notable features include a new look and feel called Infinity, better wireless networking, enhanced Bluetooth integration, better laptop operation, and a host of other tweaks and fixes.
Fantastic. I really love Fedora. Fedora, for those who don't know, is the project that took over from the old Red Hat Linux. It's the community version of Red Hat Linux when Red Hat went entirely on the commercial side. The community free, completely free side became Fedora.
And how much does it cost, Graham?
It costs whatever it costs you to download it over your internet connection. Yeah.
Absolutely nothing. Go to...
Except on Telstra.
http://fedoraproject.org to download your copy of Fedora 8.
Please, you...
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
I've got a doozy for you this week. This is one of the ones which, you come across from time to time and you go... Hey, isn't that good? I better tell my friends about it. For most of us, which I reckon is everyone in this room I know, uses Firefox.
We do.
The browser. Yep. There's one downside of Firefox, and it's not Firefox's fault. It's normally Microsoft's fault. You can't actually see it. Well, some sites just say, no, you've got to see IE or use IE to see a page, Now, what do you do? Normally you cut and paste the URL.
No, I find another link. I refuse.
Okay, well...
You're telling me I no longer have to refuse.
No, you don't have to refuse. If you go to this website, which is called IEView, there's no W's in front of this.
Okay.
Just IEView, spelt V-I-E-W, .mozdev.org, you'll find a lovely little application, which you download. It's a little plugin that goes into your Firefox. And what it does is it gives you a right-click ability so that when you go to a link in a web page which you have to view in Internet Explorer, or even if you just want to open it in Internet Explorer, you just right click on it and go open in IE, and it just opens the link up into IE.
Yeah.
One right click and away you go. None of this cut and paste and copy and stick it into the other thing. And now that I've been using it for a week or so, I can't live without it. It's really good, because if you have to go to some of those sites, or you, as a web developer, you want to see what it looks like in both IE and Firefox.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good idea, yeah.
It's really, really handy. It's just a one right click away. So there you go. I thought that'd be... And if you've got any good gadgets, send them into us and we'll tell people about it, because I thought that was an absolute doozy. So,
so that's your website of the week.
The Tech Talk Radio website of the week is ieview.mozdev.org.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Shoot. Missed it by that much.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
An inventor from Fresno in California has been granted a US patent for his straw hat design. His straw hat design uses four solar panels woven into the brim of the hat to power a small fan to cool the head of the wearer. Tommy Nellen is a graduate in electrical engineering and has a keen interest in solar power. He's been designing and building renewable energy products, including wind generation, solar space heating, solar hot water, but above all, solar electrical systems.
Is he going to stop there, or is he going to continue on his merry way?
Having had a look at his website, he's going to continue on for many years yet.
Yeah.
Would you wear a straw hat with solar panels built in, Graham?
No.
It's a bit like it's a bit like the old Australian, you know, thing with the corks around it, isn't it, to get rid of the blowies?
The bush hat with the corks dangling from the brim.
Yes.
Now, gone are the days of corks. Now we have solar panels and small fans.
Fantastic.
Mm.
Very good. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Newsreaders extraordinaire there, over there on the other side of the panel. You have been watching them on the webcam this evening. That's Dr. Ron on the left-hand side there and Graham on the right. And I'm sort of hiding here behind the microphone on the other side. We did move the camera around, so if you missed it, there you go. We won't be on every week, but nonetheless, it's been fun, hasn't it? We've got four shows to go, I think. We're our last show for this year.
Yeah.
December the 10th. Yeah, that week is our last show for 2007.
Then we're having a summer series.
That's good. I'm glad you said that.
System, won't we? Or one of
I
us
hope
will
so.
Be.
Someone, yeah. Any volunteers? Yeah, good. All right. Once again, thank you very much. You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio right around Australia, around the world on the pod and all those sort of things. It's been a lot of fun being in your ears, and we'll do it again next week. So bye for now.
Tech Talk Radio is brought to you each and every week by a band of dedicated professionals from within the broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer and host Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, panellists Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins, expert opinion from Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications, and podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night from 8 p.m. The crew wish to thank all the stations that take the show, including 3WBC, 3XX, Cairns FM, Highlands FM and Queer FM in Western Australia. Tech Talk Radio is available for syndication on your local station. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9018 9043 or visit the website techtalkradio.com.au for more information. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.